Days out from the Glasgow Climate Summit, the Coalition has formally adopted a net zero emissions by 2050 target. For weeks now, the government has been spruiking its technology not taxes line at every opportunity. Today, the Energy and Emissions Reduction Minister, Angus Taylor, announced existing priority technology will account for about 85% of reductions, and as yet unknown technologies will cover a further 15% reduction.
This is not technologies we don't necessarily know about. It may well be technologies that we know quite a lot about, but have not yet got to the point where we can make them priority technologies.
And that's Angus Taylor. Prime Minister Scott Morrison insists his cabinet is 100% behind the plan, despite opposition from the Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce. But he still won't detail the price tag on that national support.
There is only one plan. The policies of the government, the policies are of the whole government. And what has been important in ensuring that we're able to come to agreement on this is a couple of things. First one is to ensure that we have a proper mechanism through the Productivity Commission to ensure that the goal of this policy, which is not just to reduce emissions but to ensure the socio-economic health of our country and particularly our rural and regional areas, that is something that we will continue to scrutinise.
Dan Tehan joins us shortly, but the Labor side of politics is pretty concerned about all of this. They say that this will continue to be an issue. Here's Labor's Shadow Energy Minister Chris Bowen criticising the lack of detail.
I've seen more detailed fortune cookies than the document released by the government today.
Dan Tehan is the Trade, Tourism and Investment Minister and my guest. Welcome.
Good to be with you, Patricia.
There is very little new detail in today's plan. It is largely based on last year's technology roadmap. There's no new money allocated. Why has it taken until now to see it?
Look, it builds on the technology roadmap, and that's important because when you're putting a plan in place, you've got to make sure that you do the detail work. And we've begun that work over a long period of time, and we continue to build on it. That's getting outcomes, and that's the most important thing. We will get our Paris target. We'll meet and beat it. We got our Kyoto targets, and we're confident if we continue down the approach that we're taking that we will get to net zero by 2050, and we'll do so in a way which enables our economy to continue to grow and jobs to continue to be created. And that's been the success of the approach we've taken up until now, and that's the approach that we'll take into the future.
We still haven't seen the modelling. The Prime Minister's saying it will be released. Why not release it today, given it's pretty key?
Oh, well, we wanted to make sure that everyone knew that we had a plan and set that plan out. And that's what the Minister for Energy has done today, Angus Taylor, with the Prime Minister. And then the modelling will follow after that. We understand the modelling is a key component of this, and it'll be released in due course. But the most important thing was to make sure that everyone understands that the government has a serious plan, that we're taking that plan to Glasgow. And I must say, I welcome the comments from the British Prime Minister where he said what we've actually done has been heroic. I think, he has summed up very well what the approach that we're taking and the approach that the government has really put to making sure that we not only commit to net zero by 2050, but that there is a plan that shows how we'll do it.
Yeah, but with respect, I mean, if you're relying on technologies that haven't even been invented yet, like we don't even know about, how can you be confident that you're going to get there like that?
Well, I've got full confidence in it just through the work that I do locally, but also as Australia's Trade and Investment Minister. I'm confident, for instance, that we'll see aluminium smelters in this country powered 100% by renewables by 2030. And I think that is absolutely achievable. And if you take the Portland aluminium smelter in my electorate, it uses 10% of Victoria's electricity needs. So that just gives you one example. When I was in Japan in Kobe a couple of months ago, I went to the port which will take the first shipment of liquid hydrogen exported from Australia to Japan. And already the ship has been built that will transport that liquid hydrogen. The storage has been built that will hold it. And that first shipment of liquid hydrogen will take place at the end of this year. So we're seeing these technological developments occurring before our very eyes.
Now, Minister, we've been told the plan will mean Australians will be better off by $2,000 a year and will create 62,000 jobs in mining and heavy industry. But without seeing the modelling, how can you expect Australians to believe it? And where will these jobs be?
So, obviously, the modelling will be released in due course, and that'll be part of the plan. Obviously, the plan has been released, and that's been important that we get the plan out before Glasgow, and then the modelling will be released. And Australians can believe this plan because we've demonstrated that we can do this through what we've been able to achieve already. We've seen a 20% reduction in emissions while our economy has continued to grow and jobs have continued to grow. And, you know, another important area of my work is looking at, okay, what will be the future critical minerals and rare earths that we will need to develop the technologies that we will need, whether it be for batteries, whether it be for solar, whether it be for electric vehicles. A $2 billion facility is now available, thanks to Export Finance Australia, to enable this new sector of our economy to really grow. And we're seeing companies investing in this area, and we know that there'll be huge job creation come in the rare earths and critical minerals area. So there's just another example of the type of investing we're seeing from the government to help and support our industries to make sure our economy continues to grow while we deal with emissions reduction.
The international conversation has shifted to more ambitious 2030 targets, but Australia won't ratchet up your targets, even if you're saying that you're probably going to deliver higher targets. You still won't even commit to those higher targets. Why the reluctance?
Well, what we've done is we made commitments for 2030, and we're going to honour those commitments, and we're going to meet and beat them, and we'll be able to detail how we're going to meet and beat them at Glasgow. And then what we're absolutely committed to is making sure that our next commitment, net zero by 2050, that we will meet that. And that's the most important thing. So we've got a strong track record, whether it be Kyoto, whether it be Paris, and now we've got to set our sights on making sure we do it when it comes to 2050. And it's a commitment that, once again, will all be about making sure we meet our targets and our commitments, but while we grow our economy, because it's very easy to reduce emissions by killing off industries. That's not the approach that we want to take. We want to make sure that we do this by growing industries and growing our economy and growing jobs.
Will you be attending COP26?
I won't be. It'll be the Prime Minister and the Minister for Energy who will be attending. I'll be back for the WTO ministerial meeting in Geneva at the end of November, where once again I'll be putting the case for other ways we can lead we can get global emissions reduction. And one of those areas is making sure that countries who use agricultural subsidies start to make sure that they don't use them to the extent that they are. $1.8 trillion by 2030 is the forecast. The Food and Agricultural Organization, the United Nations Development Program, the United Nations Environmental Program has said we cannot meet our Paris targets. We cannot meet up if we don't deal with agricultural subsidies. And the EU and the US have a key role to play in that area.
You've said discussions are underway to establish travel bubbles with Bali and Singapore. What stage are those discussions at?
Well, obviously, the discussions with Singapore are very advanced. The Prime Minister last Friday said that he was looking forward to a green lane or a travel bubble opening with Singapore in the coming weeks. The Singaporeans have also said that they're very keen to see that occur. Obviously, when it comes to Bali, we would love to see Australians being able to return to Bali. Not only do Australians love to go there, but tourism is such an important part of the Balinese economy. We've got conversations which are occurring with the Indonesian government around that, but obviously we've got to make sure we discuss that with states and territories. The health advice supports what we're looking to do, so those conversations will continue.
Are we likely to see bubbles in place for summer?
Look, that's my hope, that we will see something occur with Singapore in the near future, and then we can look to build on that with Japan, with South Korea, with the US, with the United Kingdom. Hopefully we can get an outcome with Bali and the Indonesian government. These are all things we'll be looking to progress with states and territories, making sure that as we continue to open up, we do so in a safe way, but the way that enables Australians to be able to travel freely and get back to those destinations that they love to visit.
Cruisers could be back in Australian waters by Christmas. Will there be any restrictions on the number of passengers?
So currently we're enabling cruise ships to operate where they have 100 or less passengers on them. The cruise shipping industry wanting to obviously enable larger cruise ships to come and ply our waters have put forward a very detailed plan which would enable them to be able to operate larger scale vessels here in Australia. They've done a lot of work on this plan. Cruise ships are operating, I think it's in about 50 to 60 countries now, and have been doing so in some places for a large part of this year. So we'll continue to work with states and territories on this. But you know, as Australia's tourism minister, I would love to see cruising occurring here in Australia again this summer.
Dan Tehan, we're out of time. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure, Patricia.
Dan Tehan, the Trade, Tourism and Investment Minister. This is Drive.